We are now ready to begin the jury charge portion of the RPR examination, which is 5 minutes of dictation at 200 words per minute. Ready? Begin. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, now that you have heard all the evidence and the arguments of counsel, it is my duty to instruct you on the law which applies to this case. You will have a copy of these instructions in the jury room for your deliberations. Since this is a criminal case, there are two basic rules you must keep in mind. First, the defendant is presumed to be innocent unless and until proved guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The indictment in this case is just a formal document listing the charge. It is not proof of anything. Second, for you to convict, the state must prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the defendant is guilty of the crime charged. A defendant has the right to remain silent and does not have to prove her innocence or present any evidence. The fact that she chose not to testify may not be held against the defendant. The defendant has been charged in count one of the indictment with assault with intent to commit murder, in that she is alleged to have shot her husband. In order for you to determine her guilt on count one, the government must prove each element of the charge beyond reasonable doubt. First, they must prove to you that the defendant intentionally shot John Bates, and second, they must prove that she did so with a specific intent to commit murder. There has been some evidence offered in the case that the defendant acted in self-defense. You may find her use of force to be justified if you find that she reasonably thought that the force was necessary in order to defend herself or some other person against the threat of bodily harm. But a person must use no more force than seems reasonably necessary under the facts. You are here only to decide if the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the charge in the indictment. Your verdict must be based only on the evidence you have heard or seen while in court. The defendant is not on trial here for any conduct or offense not charged in the indictment. A separate crime is charged in each count. You must determine each count separately. Your verdict on one count should not control your verdict on any other count. You have heard statements about other acts by the defendant. You are to consider those acts only as they bear on the intent to commit the crimes alleged in this case and for no other purpose. You have also heard what is called character evidence as it relates to the peacefulness of the defendant. In deciding this case, you should treat that testimony in the same manner as all the other evidence in the case. Certain charts and summaries have been shown to you in order to help explain the facts as to the location and the manner in which this assault is alleged to have occurred. They are not evidence or proof of any facts. If they do not correctly reflect the facts shown by the evidence in the case, you should disregard these charts and determine the facts from the underlying evidence. An act is done knowingly if the defendant is aware of the act and does not act or fails to act through ignorance, mistake, or accident. The state does not have to prove that the defendant knew that her acts or omissions were not lawful. You may consider evidence of the defendant's words, acts, or omissions, as well as all the other factors in this case, in deciding whether she acted knowingly. From time to time during the trial, it has been necessary for me to talk with the lawyers out of the hearing of the jury, either by having a conference at the bench when the jury is present in the courtroom or by calling a recess. Please understand that these discussions were not to keep any facts from you, but were just to decide how the evidence is to be treated under our rules of law and to avoid confusion and error. I did not always grant a lawyer's request for a conference. Do not consider the fact that I granted or denied a request for a conference as an indication of my opinion of the case or of what I feel your verdict should be. When you retire to the jury room, you should elect one member of the jury as your foreperson. That person will preside over the deliberations and will speak for you here in court. You should then discuss the case with your fellow jurors to reach an agreement, if you can do so. Your verdict, whether guilty or not guilty, must be unanimous. Each of you must decide the case for yourself, but you should do so only after you have considered all the evidence, discussed it fully with the other jurors, and listened to the views of your fellow jurors. Do not be afraid to change your opinion if the discussion persuades you that you should, but do not come to a decision simply because some of the other jurors think it is right. It is important that you attempt to come to a unanimous verdict, but, of course, only if each of you can do so after having made your own careful decision. Do not change an honest belief you may hold about the weight and effect of the evidence just to reach a verdict. The punishment provided by law for this crime is for the court to decide at a later time. You may not consider punishment in deciding whether the state has proved its case against the defendant beyond a reasonable doubt. When you have reached unanimous agreement on a verdict, your foreperson will fill in the form that has been given to you, sign and date it, and advise the bailiff, who will be outside your door, that you are ready to return to court.